I am thrilled to have Sister Alexandra Kovacs back here. Earth Day, which we are bookending here now, I am delighted to say is becoming increasingly known and celebrated around the world. There were festivities this year that included 1 billion people around the planet. It is now officially the largest secular celebration on the planet. And I think that this is a good thing. I remember the first one 40 years ago like it was yesterday. We all rode our bicycles to high school like we were doing somebody a favor. But I'm delighted the way our consciousness has grown. Sister Alexandra is a hardest working woman in Christendom. She teaches all the time and leads retreats quite regularly all the time for significant numbers of people all around the world, and just came back from Santa Fe where she was working with 100 Catholic clergy from around the planet, sharing what she knows about things that matter in regard to the cosmos and the earth. The latest creation that Sister Alexandra has given birth to is, and she is the executive director of, a new nonprofit called the Green Hearth Collective, not the Green Heart, the Green Hearth Collective. And they are beginning to realize great plans for a retreat center in Oregon, which will celebrate cosmology and ecology and spirituality. So would you please be generous in welcoming back Sister Alexandra Kovacs to Unity of Bellevue.
Good morning. You know, I'm not too sure if I like this, because this way you can tell if my knees are shaking or not. It's wonderful to be back with you. And I listened to John's reflections from last week on creativity, and I was really struck by the fact that our passion emerges from things that really touch us deeply. And when John asked me, he says, "What are you passionate about? Would you like to talk about it?" And I had a lot of choices. But the particular thing I wanted to share in light of Earth Day and celebrating creation is a continued reflection on cosmology from three different perspectives. What I find is that a number of years ago, over 20 years ago, I was a student in Chicago studying creation spirituality with Matthew Fox. And one of our visitors was Thomas Berry. And I know many of you are familiar with his writings and his gift to creation and to the human family. And for the first time, he named three cosmic principles that when I heard them, there was a cellular shift in me. And I've never been the same. And it is that event that led me to doctoral studies, and that event that invited me to explore these principles and their implications for spirituality. The people that have been most influential in my life, and I want to honor Brian, and he is the one, and Thomas Berry and Théa de Chardin, these three men have been incredibly influential in what is emerging and unfolding in me in light of their teachings. And so it's those three principles that I like to reflect on, but not just in the abstract. I think sometimes we are really good at grasping ideas. But for me, the key insight is, how do we embody it? The ideas can be wonderful out there, but unless our behavior and our life expresses those dynamics, then we are not going to go anywhere. Because one of our major gifts as human beings is to be self-reflective and to engage with looking at what we do and then step back and reflect. Is this life-giving? Is this for the sake of the larger community, or are we becoming oppressors by the way we behave and the choices that we make? So I have notes for me, because then I'd leave you here for many, many moons. I have so much to say. So what I'd like to share is these three principles dance together. In other words, they are constantly in interaction. The difficulty is that sometimes when we see something and focus on something, we assume that it is separate. And in our Western philosophy, we have equated differences with separation. And that's getting us into a lot of trouble. So these principles dance together, but in order to understand them, I'm going to look at, bring one of them to the forward and then leave the other two in the back, but image this dance going on. They are called principles rather than laws because they've been only tested from our planet's perspective. They have not been tested from outer space. So the cosmic dynamic is reflecting that their cosmic principles reflects the reality, that they are present everywhere, but we haven't really tested them. Another part of this, the dynamic, is that these principles, these laws, are found both on the galactic level and on the subatomic level. So they basically are ways of the universe that are affecting all of creation. And the rest of creation continues to participate and engage in these dynamics. And we humans can say no to it because often we are not even aware that this is part of our very makeup. So let me talk about the first principle. And the first principle is called differentiation. This principle refers to the unending diversity we observe in the universe. It says that one of the characteristics of the universe is that it evolves in a variety of forms. This diversity manifests itself everywhere, both on the subatomic levels and on the cosmic levels. Where elementary particles are present on the cosmic level, and cosmic galactic levels of existence express that difference as well. Variety seems to be the way of our cosmos, the way of our universe. And the primordial fireball of 13.7 billion years ago differentiated itself into all that has come to being ever since. The electrons, the protons, the stars, the galaxies, multicellular organisms, the immense variety of flora and fauna, as well as the rich diversity of humans. Each is a unique manifestation of existence, and the more we come to know a particular being or a particular reality, the more we discover the differences. Let me give an example. I'm sure that many of you know fraternal twins, people who very much look alike. And when you initially meet them, it's very difficult to differentiate them. But if you spend enough time in getting to know them, you will clearly know the difference between one or the other. Isn't that true? A number of years ago, I worked quite a bit with young people. And I had a prayer experience where I wanted them to really come to commune with gift of creation. So I asked them to pray an apple. I brought in a basket of apples, and then I gave each took one, and I said, now get to know this apple. Not by eating it. Don't become one with it. But get to know it. And so they spent some time getting to know it, and I invited them to put it back in the basket. And what happened was that afterwards, and I didn't tell them, and afterwards I said, find your apple. And they were able to do it. Why? Because they spent enough time reflecting, engaging, communing, contemplating that apple in a way that there was a relationship. It wasn't just an object over there. And so they recognized the difference was there for them because they got to know it. Now, what does this say? It says to me that we are not just tolerate differences, but we to celebrate them because the Creator is one who delights and enjoys differences. And how difficult it is for us to engage even on the human level with somebody who is different from us. How do we recognize that that difference is a blessing and it is a gift? And it's not about sort of minimizing or bringing everybody down to the common sort of denominator, but to allow those differences to break forth and spill out. The universe is characterized by an impulse toward the generation of differences. Simply to be is to be different. The universe unfolds in diversification and differentiation. And I believe it's a very important principle for us to look at in terms of our spirituality. Now, one of the ways, and there are as many ways as there are people to engage with this principle, but I'd like to suggest that one of the ways that we can honor these differences is what I refer to is to honor it by reverencing, by growing in reverence, not just toward one another, but also toward all the gifts of creation. And I invite us to let go of the language of resource. Because the minute I say resource, I have objectified a part of creation, and I have made it resource for whom? Of course, it's for the human being. But that gift of creation has, by its very being, has the ability to praise the Creator. And do we want to silence that voice of praise when we exterminate species because of how we live and the choices that we make? I sense that another profound invitation of this particular gift of creation invites us to live in gratitude. That's not new. Basically, what I'm saying is really not new, but it's help you to remember in terms how these gifts of creation, this web of life, is so intricately part of our whole existence. Gratitude is an essential component of honoring the diversity. Because when I'm grateful, I tend with care toward a particular reality. So let me ask the question, how did you pray water today? All of us had experiences of water today. We used it in our mentality. But to recognize that that wondrous gift is there to wake us up if we splashed our faces or participated in that first drink of the morning that helped us wake us up. But we take it for granted. Do you realize that two-thirds of our world, our sisters and brothers do not have potable water? And we use it. We live in a consumer society, and this law challenges our consumerism. In the past, consumption was a disease, and now it is a way of life. And we need to shift from that. How are we called to relate to the gifts of creation? And I sense that this cosmic principle invites us precisely to do that. I'd like to share a quote by Fyodor Dostoevsky from Brothers Karamazov. As you know, much profound spirituality is found in good literature and poetry. And so this is what he says. Love all God's creation, the whole of it, and every grain of sand. Love every leaf, every ray of God's light. Love the animals, love the plants. Love everything. If you love everything, you will perceive the divine mystery in things. And once you have perceived it, you will begin to comprehend ceaselessly more and more every day. And you will come to at last to love the whole world with an abiding, universal love. Love, serve. And remember. The second principle that I would like to reflect on very briefly is the principle, now I'm going to use a Greek word, autopoiesis. It's a big word, but let me pull it apart. And I'm choosing it because I will share with you other language, but if I use that language, then you'll say, well, I think I know what that means. Auto means self, yeah, like an automobile is a self-starter. And poiesis is formation. So this principle of autopoiesis provides the inner dynamic of every being, of every entity. What does that mean? It means that even an atom has an organizing principle inside of it. But the more complex the being, the more it's evident. So, for instance, how does an acorn know to become an oak tree? There is this inner voice, this inner dynamic that enables it to become. How do, if you're a gardener, you have a handful of seeds, you know, a variety, and then you plant them. You don't need to tell that daisy to become a daisy, or that, I'm trying to think of other sort of flowers, or that wonderful lily of the valley, or that, you know, whatever those, they know to become themselves. Well, that's also true for us as human beings. And so what does this principle mean? This principle of autopoiesis refers to the capacity each entity, each being possesses to participate in the unfolding story of being and becoming. This capacity, this power, is understood as the inner dynamic of things. It's the withinness of inner reality, that it contains the entities, the being's ability to become. Autopoiesis is both found on the personal, individual level as well as the communal level. This church, this particular gathering that's here this morning, even though you come with the same intention and the same dynamic, is different than the 11 o'clock one. You know, it's the same sort of principles that you believe in and live out of, but because you are your unique selves, you are different from that reality. And notice even differences are manifest within the principles of autopoiesis. Well, I'd like to connect this with what John talked about last week, about the creative life. Because, as he quotes his favorite author, Eric Butterworth, he said that true prayer is letting go of the problem and being receptive to the transcendent solution that is already in you. Each of us is a blessing seed, and that blessing seed needs to emerge and come out and flourish. And I need to trust that seed. And that seed gets nourished and flourished by others, but ultimately I am the primary one responsible for it. Nobody can do it for me. And this has tremendous implications for parents, for teachers, for pastors. I am not here to impose anything on you. I am here to evoke that blessing seed that's already present in you. That blessing seed that often gets sort of trampled upon or bent in the process or broken. But your inner life, your dynamic is already there. And my job is to evoke it and to help you grow into it. And we need to trust that. Now, I'd like to share with you a story about this autopoiesis that might get the picture better. Once upon a time, there was a boy, an old man, and a donkey. The old man was sitting on the donkey, and the little boy walked beside him. And there were some people that saw them, and they said, "Oh, isn't that awful? That old man is making the little boy walk." So the two of them talked to each other, and they said, "I guess they are right." So now it's the little boy that's on the donkey, and the old man is walking. And they come by another group of people, and they say, "Oh, look at that selfish little boy. He's making the old man walk." So they talk, and they said, "I guess those people are right." So they both sit on the donkey. So here come some animal activists, and they are talking to each other, and they said, "Isn't that awful, that heavy burden that they are putting on that donkey?" And so they say, "I guess they are right." So they get off, and they carry the donkey. And they come to cross a bridge, and then the donkey falls into the river. The moral of the story: if you try to please everyone, you might as well kiss your ass goodbye. How often do we allow others to tell us who we are and what to do, rather than trusting that sacred... Did I surprise you, John?
In a good way.
How important it is for us to trust that blessing seed. What God has trusted, we must learn to trust. And so this cosmic principle refers to us to listen to our inside and how we are called to grow and develop and unfold, not just for our sake, but how can we discern that how God is calling us to share our gifts, to serve. Because ultimately, we are to serve and to love. And so we are called to co-create this dynamic and this reality. And as you know, we have a lot to do because we have made such a mess of our world, both in terms of the human dynamic. We have more wars today than ever before. And we call ourselves civilized. We have more violence and toward creation than ever before. This creative principle, this autopoietic principle, invites us to build that wonderful gift of creation that we are called to co-create. And it takes, this principle challenges us to take our birthright of creativity seriously for the sake of the larger community and the web of life. And so then the third principle that I would like to explore is the principle of communion. And I don't have to say much about it to this group because you constantly are focusing on the oneness of creation and the Creator and the oneness that is present and available. But this particular principle refers to the relational nature of created reality. It refers to the fact of interconnectedness among all that exists. And through this principle, relationship is perceived as of the essence of being and becoming. And this is where I refer to what's called belly button theology. Our belly buttons remind us that we did not come into this world on our own. And yet so often we act as if we were the only ones. There exists at the base of all creation a cosmic genetic interrelatedness from the beginning of time, 13.7 billion years ago. And this relatedness defines and connects the universe as a community of subjects. We are not talking about objects, but because each has a center of identity, which is the autopoiesis. Within all of creation, there exists a deep interrelatedness and interdependence. And as Brian Swim says, that as we sit here, it's possible that some of the molecules that you and I are breathing are molecules that were breathed by Jesus in his lifetime or by Muhammad. You know, to recognize that's interdependence. As we've been sitting and standing here, we've exchanged water vapor and a little hot air, you know. But to really recognize that interdependence and interconnectedness is the way of the Creator. This is the way of the universe. But we don't live out of that reality. We often look at separate boxes and compartments. So what does this principle have to say about our spirituality? It seems to me it calls us to our commitment to love. To recognize that every part of the web of creation is to be an allurement, a dynamic of love, and our commitment to love it is absolutely essential. And it calls us to become more intimate and more compassionate people. And so it seems to me that this principle invites us to hospitality. And for me, that's very important. And maybe it's because of my story that I am a refugee in your midst. But hospitality means that I'm able to welcome you as you are. I won't say that you can come if you have money or you speak nicely or if you dress well or if you're educated. That's not hospitality. I welcome you in your fullness, both in your gifts and in your limitations. But I cannot be hospitable to you unless I am at home with myself. So how are you hospitable to yourself, both to your body and to your whole being? Instead of, you know, I don't like this, I don't like that, and we tear ourselves apart rather than this whole being is loved. And when we come to know it, that's when we are able to grow into fuller wholeness and being. And then the other invitation to spirituality in terms of this principle is compassion. And compassion means that we live with an awareness of the interrelatedness of all life and all reality. But then it's not just an awareness, but then I celebrate that where it exists. And so you can gather here in celebration because that sense of communion exists among you here as this community. But it's also about healing where that connection has been severed. So how are you, how am I called to live that way of compassion in light of this principle? Meister Eckhart, I'm sure you've heard about him before from John. He's also one of my wisdom teachers. And he says something profound for me. He says, for those who follow compassion, find life for themselves, justice for their neighbor, and glory for God. How are you called to nurture that compassion? I believe that each of these cosmic principles invites us to engage in certain values and certain ways of being. And by living into them more fully, we will be much more gentle, respectful, compassionate participants in the whole web of life. And I'd like to close with a poem called Amazing Grace by Miriam Dyack. The directions are very simple. Become the earth's heart, as if you could swallow it and let your lungs pump the force that so effortlessly shoot fire through crystals, oaks, warblers, into a thousand simmering layers of song. And now that you are Earth's heart, let all the love that has burned like a secret engine, that has kept watch like a bride in a tower, while time grew up impenetrable and thorny all around, let it in blending purity rise spiraling to the sun. This assumes you know what love is, like a single cell, suddenly knowing what blood is and rushing with true joy to the heart.